This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving. Sorry about that. It was a blast of air from the air conditioning because while I was setting up my equipment, I had the air conditioning on high. I am going to turn the air conditioning on since I have air conditioning because it's a little warm today. It's not too bad. Not too bad. I'm not complaining. A little warm. It's been a good week. I was able to get some things accomplished this week that needed to be accomplished. And so people are encouraged. Had to start off the week with apologizing to the people I'm working with on my current project and say, yep, you know what? I underestimated what we were going to do there, and I'm not going to be done with the design in that amount of time. But they were very gracious. They said, it's just good to know we're making progress. So that was good. I don't like writing those emails, but you know, you got to write them and let people know what's going on. So I asked for another 2 weeks and was able to make substantial progress on it this week. I've got some tweaking to do next week, but it's basically I'm past the big hard part, which was integrating with BizTalk 2013's business rule engine and setting all that stuff up so I had something to demo with. And so it's been a long week, and I have been plowing to get through this stuff and get it all set up so I can do this prototype. But when I was left today, it was working. So that's good. In other news, I'm going to be scrambling this week to get caught up on words. We'll see over the next 2 days how I do. I think I can still bring in my 5,000 words this week. Soonest, I am going to be starting the revisions and rewrites for Windfall the 99 and 1, because everybody's supposed to get back with me with their corrections by September the 1st. So on Monday, I'm going to start doing that, start plowing through that. We actually have Monday off, so I'm going to start plowing through that and try to get that all taken care of. So that'll be good. I think September, I've set aside September to get all the corrections in for that, and then do whatever tweaks I'm going to do to the cover and get that up and get that published, and then have to go through and get the Kindle done, Kindle version, the iBook version, the EPUB version for Nook, and get those all uploaded. So it's a job. So September is going to disappear on me when it comes to Windfall broadcast. But hopefully I'll be able to plow through that stuff in September, and then October, I can get back to Windfall broadcast, get that book finished up, and hopefully be ready for a beta on that book in January of 2015. So far, the response seems to be okay to Windfall the 99 and 1. As always, I have some people who really liked it. I have other people that kind of were turning their heads sideways at me, but, you know, that's okay. that's okay. These things, that's just the way it goes. So, I need to make a little quick stop as I'm driving home today, because I'm going to pick up one of the books that's been edited up by one of my beta readers. And she said, when she wrote, she said, well, it's certainly not the feel-good type books that you've written before. I said, no, it isn't. So, and she hasn't read That Faded Shore, which really isn't a feel-good book, but that's okay. I do have one beta reader who really liked That Faded Shore. And Of course, then he liked this book, too, because it was a little darker. So, you know, everybody's got their own things. Just everybody's got their own things. So, it's fun. What else? We had a lovely visit with some relatives this last week. And they have a new baby, so they came up. And so we spent some time together. That was fun. And then also, I guess that was after the podcast. We had some other relatives that came in, I think last Thursday, stayed with us Friday, and then Saturday they took off on Saturday. I can't remember. Anyways, and then some other relatives came in on Sunday and stayed with us for a couple of days. So it's been, August has been the month for relatives coming in, which is just fine because it's been fun and it's been good to see people again. So, but we are through August now and things will just settle back into our plain old routine. Which that's okay too, because I like our routine. And Doctor Who is back up and going, so. And my kids have a subscription, a season pass, so we're actually going to get to see The Who as it's being played. Well, week late, but, you know, a lot better than waiting months and months, so that's going to be fun. That's coming up. Anyways, topic today, kind of continuing on my quest to understand better, understand the differences in gender better, and know how to relate. Obviously, for many years, I have pursued a policy that in myself of trying to train myself away from the standard lie that the flesh tells men, which is that women exist only to serve as tools to help us control our sperm count. And I have tried to train myself away from that standard lie. And, you know, that's led to certain things. One of them is that I do not tell women how attractive they look. Just doesn't come up in conversation. If they happen to be wearing some cool funky pants or some cool funky shoes or something, I'll go, oh, cool shoes, or oh, cool pants. But that's it. It's just never, ever, well, you're really looking hot today. Okay, never, ever, never. Doesn't matter how a woman's dressed, never, ever. But apparently, I am not among the majority. And there was an article that I was reading in Forbes, I think. Was it Forbes? I think so, it was Forbes. Yes, it was Forbes.com. And the title of the article was, What It's Like Raising Money as a Woman in Silicon Valley. Now, obviously, in Silicon Valley, with the venture capitalists, you know, it's supposed to be a very egalitarian place. It's supposed to be like a meritocracy. And so when you go there, and I've been guilty of thinking this as well, that I don't understand why any people who feel that they're underprivileged, I don't understand why, you know, they're so insistent that there's just no opportunities when, okay, it's the internet, so why don't you just buy some development tools and start your own little business and see what can happen? And there is still an element to that, because when you can have something like a Flappy Bird, I think that's what it was called, that just goes insanely popular. And it was estimated that the guy was making $50,000 a month in advertising. This is a single developer. He just made this Flappy Bird app, and I've tried it. And it is addictive. There is no question about that. And it is hard. It is very difficult. And you would think that people would get mad because it's so difficult and stop playing it, but it is both addictive and hard at the same time, and every time you die, you think, oh, if I had just done, oh, and then you want to try again. And therein lies the secret of Flappy Bird. So, and that was just one guy. Turns out he was in Vietnam, I think. So, you know, there is opportunity. The internet has created opportunity. Now, the standard track for moving from a single developer or multiple developers and then moving up through the ranks and actually launching a business obviously moves through venture capitalists. And therein lies the rub. And so the article was written actually anonymously. And from the context of the article, it apparently was written anonymously by an attractive woman who has been involved in several startups trying to get funding for these startups. And she tells some tales of some unfortunate occurrences. And from everything that I can see in the article and what she describes in the article, she is making her best attempt to deflect the type of advances that she has gotten and is getting, but it nonetheless keeps happening to her. The writer of the article, or in introducing the article, Forbes.com said, you know, we don't normally do anonymous articles, but we happen to know this person, you know, reputable person, and the only way she would agree to do it was if she would write about her experiences, but her name was omitted. And the reason for that, they said, is that the startup community is a small one, and founders of companies rely heavily on social capital and goodwill, and therefore speaking up carries big risks. And so the author of the article, in sharing her experiences, was concerned that if she attached her name to it, it would just be another problem she was going to have to tackle. So she starts out describing going to her car and about how the fact that she'd been put in another impossible situation and cornered by a lopsided power dynamic, subjected to what any HR department in the world would define as sexual harassment. The problem was she didn't work for a company. She runs one. And it wasn't happening within the tidy confines of the company. It was happening as she was trying to raise money for her company. And she said, you know, it's the Wild West out there when you get into that. She said what had happened was the particular Saturday had started as usual. She had picked up some produce at a farmer's market and then headed in to the office to do more work. She said, like most founders, she works weekends to stay on top of the seemingly endless tasks that arise from her growing company. They had released an Android application and they were, you know, it was doing well. Was being downloaded in 52 companies. They needed their next round of funding, so she was on the phone engaging. I need to turn off here at some point, and I need to remember where it is. I think it's this one. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. So she was had contacted a venture capitalist, and she, you know, sent out a bunch of emails, and one of them said, sure, let's catch up this evening. My house, I need to put the kids down. So she said, we had met months early through a family acquaintance. And he was a VC, and his interests seemed to align with mine. She said we had previously shared several civil lunch meetings. She said I didn't give too much thought about the choice of location. So she said on, now I think I'm right here. I am. So she said, before heading out, she said I changed into nondescript pants and a baggy high net sweater. She said I pulled my hair back and I made sure my makeup didn't communicate anything besides professionalism. She said I assumed that his wife would be home, and she said I didn't want to give any of them the wrong idea. Okay, so I will be back with the saga of this story. I'm going to put this on pause, be back in a few minutes. Okay, so I'm back. It's amazing. It's like a time lapse. It's been like 10 minutes. But had to chat about the book a little bit and kind of describe where I'm going in the book and those kind of things. And this beta reader is a woman, so she said she enjoyed it. But then her hubby actually has a woodworking shop over here, so I had to drop in and chat with him for a little bit too. Both good people. And they are, biological mom and then stepdad of my godson. So, we've been friends with them for a long time. And it's good to touch base. Anyways, so you got this woman, and she's a venture capitalist. She has gone out of her way to not look frumpy, but at least not to accentuate her curves. Minimal makeup, pulls her hair back in a tight bun, trying to look professional, assuming that the guy's wife is going to be at home, and she didn't want to give either of them the wrong question, the wrong idea. And she said that none of that mattered. His wife wasn't home. And she said, I quickly realized that none of the paperwork I had prepared mattered either. After some small talk, he sat next to me on the couch and commented how I looked stressed. He put down his glass of wine and reached to massage my shoulders. Okay. As his hands slid further, I made a nervous joke, quickly trying to shift my weight away from him. She said, I leaned into the corner of the couch, crossed my legs, attempting to put an obstacle in his way. Undeterred, he continued to reach for me. She said, I got up, walked across the room, trying to keep it light. I commented on how often men made inappropriate advances towards me during business meetings, hoping he'd get the message. So, and this is what the guy said. Yeah, that's tough. You really can't say anything because it's one tight-knit community, he said, probably thinking he sounded sympathetic, which, of course, you say that, and you know, really the impression you're giving is, I know that I can do basically anything I want, and you're not going to say anything. So, you know, she said, if I chose to complain or make a scene and wake up his children, it would be another case of he said, she said, like the countless harassment cases that have made headlines in the tech communities, but have not done much to change the status quo. She said, given his standing in the community and his personal wealth, who would believe my claims as anything more than those of a spurned little girl upset that a VC had chosen not to invest in her company. She said this dance between work discussion and groping continued until I was finally able to excuse myself. In this case, I could have been more prudent, but sexism is a daily reality as I attempt to play ball in a man's world. After hearing my business plan, he said he was interested in spending more time to get to know me. He was looking, she said, and that was, this is another case. She said there was a few months before, she said, when she met with the bachelor. again, presumably because she, you know, she met with him to try to raise funds for her business. And she said, after hearing our business plan, this other venture capitalist said he was interested in spending more time getting to know me. He was looking for a wife, he continued, without a segue, and then proceeded to enumerate all the monetary advantages that a wife would enjoy, including a $4 million apartment in San Francisco. As in many similar situations, I attempted to politely pivot the conversation in order not to bruise the ego of the man who had just proposed something akin to an 18th century marriage of convenience. She said then she began wearing a simple gold band to meetings. She said, you know, every person she told about The Bachelor agreed that I would need to go with the flow until we finished our raising our money. It seemed silence was just one of the sacrifices required to get my business off the ground. And she goes on and makes some very valid points. She said, unlike my male peers, who can wear anything from jeans and a hoodie to a well-tailored suit, she said, I have to carefully choose my attire. She said, I want it to be feminine, but not too sexy, structured, but not form-fitting, classy, but not too expensive, lest I imply that I was bad at bootstrapping and not scrappy enough professionally, but not so stuffy that people would assume our product lacked creativity. My hair was almost always worn in a bun or pulled back conservatively. She said, in talking with other women over the years, she said, we refer to it as taking on the third gender. And she said, for all of its self-regard as the most forward-thinking place on earth, it would seem I would need to use the same tactics in Silicon Valley. So she said, what that led to, besides the way she dressed, is she also wanted people, her colleagues in the business, to stop using certain terms that were gender-laden. Like she said, you know, force of nature or firecracker. Because you don't necessarily say, oh, he's a firecracker. You more say, oh, she's a firecracker. And so that would automatically give the impression of gender. I'm getting my mail, one moment. And so she wanted them to be very careful. And also, they pretty much scrubbed the website of all gender references so that people wouldn't know that the CEO was a female. So they would do things like say, the CEO is exceptional. I've never seen an entrepreneur work so hard. And she said, the longer we would go without mentioning my gender, the farther the conversations would progress as they were trying to raise money. So she said, you know, some people say, oh, well, this is only a problem with the older generation. But she said, we can review the comments of a 28-year-old Justin Mateen, who stated that having a young female co-founder at Tinder makes the company seem a joke or devalues it. She said, or you can review the comments of a 20-something Twitter employee who told me, you really should hire a nerdy-looking dude to represent your company publicly, you know, to make up for your looks. So apparently, she's a looker, and that has a downside. One moment, I'm backing into my garage. She also said, you know, what's interesting about her situation is she said many of her male CEO colleagues build their networks. Gotta just check and make sure I'm not running into something. There we go. She said that many of her male colleagues build their networks through casual interactions around town, most often at bars. Once you've gotten drunk with somebody, you're buddies, explained a fellow founder. It makes it easier to call in a favor or get an introduction. Oh, yeah, but can you imagine? And she goes on to say this. But maintaining one's identity as a CEO outside of the workplace can be difficult. Women in bars, on boats, or at conferences are often there as significant others or just a pretty thing, sometimes hired as atmosphere models or booth babes. She did mention, she said, take the angel investor who invited me to join him and some VCs on a yacht so I could get to know them better in a relaxed setting. This same investor I knew had told one of my male colleagues that his boat trips were epic because there are always multiple blondes to every guy. So what's to be done? She says, the answer is not more female-focused funds. If I chose to solely approach women investors about my business, I would be dramatically reducing our funding options. She thinks that we need a public conversation about gender, power, and respect. One that's just not just women talking to other women. She said, as Amanda Hess noted, it's difficult for men to see misogyny. Even the masseuse continues to contact me regarding our investment progress, a clear sign that without direct confrontation about his impropriety, he is unaware how his actions were perceived. And, you know, I'm all for more conversations in the marketplace and more conversations about gender. But fundamentally, there is still this issue of the lie that the flesh tells men. And until you get a spotlight on that lie, this will just keep going on. Because really what this all comes down to is that men are viewing women as objects. It doesn't matter if they're business associates. It doesn't matter if they're very accomplished. It doesn't matter if they're pretty. It's going to be, oh, that would be a good tool that I could use. I mean, and that's that fundamental lie that we have to deal with. She says, there will never be a human resource department to govern the interactions between a founder and a potential funder. She said, that's why when I or any other female founder shows up at your door or at your restaurant or at your bar, you should assume I'm here to do business and nothing more. Well, people would make that assumption. Men would make that assumption if they had addressed the lie within their own heart about women. Because if they had addressed the lie that women do not exist simply as a tool to help men control their sperm counts, they would assume that they were to do business. And she said, you know, to do business and nothing more, even if, gasp, I'm wearing my hair down. Because that's the problem with the lie, that women are tools, is that lie will latch on to anything. And we'll purport it then. Any gesture, any curve, any, you know, makeup, any way hair is fixed, any way legs are crossed, it will latch onto everything and say, oh, well, obviously, she's willing to be a tool. No, 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 she's not. And I think that, you know, I was reading another article about the backlash with college men on campuses. How they're saying it's just a minefield out here now because, you know, we've got to be judging how drunk is the woman. Can she really give consent? Because, you know, they come and they get drunk and then they, you know, get happy and frisky and then we respond and now it's rape. Well, I think the best way to handle all of that is just not go around and have sex with people and just assume that none of the women around you exist to be used as a tool to help you control your sperm count. And that you're not going to let yourself be drawn into those situations. Because it's pointless to start saying, well, you know, she shouldn't have gotten drunk. Well, this, that, and the other. Well, this. Well, no, you just really shouldn't have taken advantage of her. And you should look women in the eye speak to them as individuals, as people, and look to try to build friendships as opposed to, you know, thinking that, oh, well, this is going to lead somewhere. No, it's not going to lead anywhere. I've had the good fortune of having many women who I consider to be friends. You know, they're not like my guy friends that I get together and talk with about, but, you know, at the same restaurants we frequent over and over, you know, several of the women there, we've gotten to know each other over time. It's a very structured environment. I like that. I had a buddy, his wife was launching some stuff, and I actually went to breakfast with her, and we talked about that stuff, and then we said goodbye, and that was it. There's no nothing. Have colleagues at work that I work with at work, and we encounter problems, and we fix them together, and we go on. And as I said at the beginning, never, ever would I ever say, you really look hot today, okay? Because that has sexual overtones. The farthest I will ever do is to say, oh, cute shoes. Because they are cute. And that doesn't have sexual overtones in it. At least I don't think it does. Hope it doesn't. But, you know, obviously it's easy for humans to misinterpret what other humans are saying. Me, I'm just going to keep trying to make my best effort to not be misunderstood, but I would imagine there will be times when I am. And then I will do whatever I can do to make up for that. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.